Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jaka. Today, we have a holiday episode just in time for the end of the year. Consider it like a late Christmas present that you didn't even know you wanted, but now that you have it, you're kind of excited about it. That's starting right now on Real College Podcast. This first piece is like a mini radio play that Alex Schumacher wrote. It is voiced by myself and Vishnu, and it's better if you just listen to it. The less explanation, the better. Here you go.
Wow. You really sang the whole thing.
All like, 10 minutes of it. Would have thought you'd get tired after the first 6 verses, but... You guys just kept going.
Well, we spent a long time practicing that one so we wouldn't get tired, and we all just love Christmas so much, so it felt like a real treat to sing.
Well, it certainly was...
Interesting?
Interesting to listen to.
And that solo about the Leaping Lords in the middle was really...
Something.
Yeah, it was really something.
We got lots more songs if you'd like to hear more.
Hold on a second. We definitely want to hear more.
We are loving this.
We should...
We should get you guys some hot cocoa!
Yes, yeah, yeah. Just wait here and don't sing, and we'll go get you some cocoa.
Oh my God, they're so bad.
So... bad. It's like they never sang before. I get that, like, cold air, it's like not the best singing conditions, but like
they were so flat
and sharp at the same time.
And what was the deal about that solo about the Leaping Lords? I didn't even know that there was a solo.
I mean, I'm Jewish, so like I'm not totally sure, but I'm pretty sure there's not a solo. And like, even if there is, I don't think it's supposed to be sang by like an old man who kind of sounds like he's dying.
Wait, you're Jewish?
Yeah, I'm Jewish. What do you mean? Yeah, yeah. Why do you think we have a menorah?
That's what that is.
Okay, we'll talk about this later. How do we get them to leave?
I don't know.
I don't want to make them cocoa.
I don't either. It's our cocoa. It's for cocoa times.
Maybe they just left on their own?
I'll go check. Oh, hi. So you're all here. Wow. The cocoa is really coming along great. Should be ready in just a few minutes. Just so we know how many mugs to bring, exactly how many of you are there? Because it seems like there are more of you now than there were a few minutes ago.
Yeah, we called some friends, asked them if they want to stop by and sing with us.
Wow, they really got here quick, huh? So how many of you are there then?
Between 24 and 50.
Wow, 24, huh? 24, well... We'll be back with 24 piping hot mugs of hot cocoa. Did you hear that?
24? Why do you need 24 carolers?
And the new ones, they look really weird, too.
Weirder than the first ones?
Yeah, they're like super tall, they have really serious faces. One has a scar in his eye all the way down his cheek.
Oh my God.
They kind of look like Bond villains. One of them was stroking a cat.
What is happening?
I don't know, but I want to die. I want to leave.
This was already really weird and very uncomfortable, but now I'm also scared.
What sins did we commit?
Well, how do we get him out of here?
Well, I could pretend to have a gun.
You're not gonna pretend to have a gun.
I have a gun?
You don't have a gun.
I can shoot a pretty mean Nerf. It's not gonna kill them, but it will hurt a bit.
They're not gonna leave if you shoot Nerf bullets at them. Why don't we just tell them that we ran out of hot cocoa?
What? We never run out of hot cocoa.
Well, do you have a better idea?
Wait, no.
That's what I thought. So just roll with it, okay?
Look, I like the gun idea.
I don't, we're leaving. Hot cocoa's gone. Okay. Hey guys, I'm so sorry. This is super embarrassing. We're so embarrassed right now. but it looks like we ran out of hot cocoa.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just continue on with the program.
Program?
We have to go. We have to go, so you have to stop singing because we have to go.
Why do you have to go?
Because I'm Jewish and we have to go to temple and I can't listen to Christmas music or else it like physically burns and it's against my Torah.
Wait, we know some Hanukkah music.
I am totally fine, but thank you so much.
Thank God it's finally over.
I can't believe I just did that. I don't lie. I am shaking. That was so weird. What time is it?
Like 8:30.
Gross. Okay, well, I'm gonna go make some coffee and I'll get the paper.
I'll be up in a little bit.
Christmas, as a lot of us know it today, is best known for being merry and bright, but that's not how it was for a long period of time. Liv brings us the slightly darker history of carols, caroling, and visits from Saint Nick.
The boar's head in hand bear I, bedecked with bay and rosemary. So I pray you, my masters, be
the holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. Oh, the rising of the sun and the running of the deer, the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing in the choir. Oh, the holly and the ivy.
What does a boar's head or holly and ivy have to do with Christmas? Not much, as most Americans today celebrate it. Finding the link between these things and Christmas requires going back in time a bit, to before the Christianization of Europe. The boar's head, now translated into the Christmas ham in many Germanic countries, was tied to the sacrifice of a wild boar at the midwinter festival. Holly and ivy were part of the Roman Britain Saturnalia festival, used to keep bad spirits away. These aren't the only Christmas traditions with a long backstory, though. Caroling itself is descended from a long line of slightly weirder, more supernatural visitations. That's the sound of a group of West sailors approaching a Welsh house with Mary Lou, the Welsh Christmas horse. She's not really a horse, but a man from town dressed in a white sheet with a brightly festooned horse's skull set over his head. The residents of the house must beat Mary Lude and her handlers in a battle of wits and rhyming, or offer them all some treats and a drink to get them to leave. In this case, they invite them in for some refreshments. There's some more singing, and then everyone takes a couple shots. And it's off to the next house. While mainstream American Christmases are often as cheery and bright as the Victorians who codified American Christmas traditions could have wished, Christmas in Northern Europe can be quite different. There's several centuries of winter holiday traditions there already, many of which predate Christianity. A lot of these are similar to Mary Lude, an otherworldly visitor who may alternately dispense cheer or punishment. There's a whole host of St. Nicholas companions based on the figures of the Wild Hunt. The Wild Hunt phenomenon has been widely documented throughout Europe beginning in medieval times. It's been seen in Germany, England, and Scandinavia with black, huge, hideous huntsmen who rode on black horses and black he-goats with their hounds jet black, eyes like saucers, and horrible, according to a group of abbots who saw it in 1127. When Jacob Grimm chronicled it in the 1800s, he said that the Wild Hunt visited the land at some holy tide, bringing welfare and blessing, accepting gifts and offerings of the people. He believed that under the influence of Christianization, the story was converted from being that of a solemn march of the gods to being a pack of horrid specters. But this whole practice of supernatural figures flying through the sky and then going house to house became assimilated into Christianity through St. Nicholas's house-visiting traditions. In Germany, the host of companions for St. Nick are direct transpositions from the Wild Hunt, including Krampus, Nachtrupert, Pernecht, and Belschnickel. Krampus is a wild goat figure that gambols through the streets carrying chains and a birch rod for catching and kidnapping kids to bring back to its forest home. Here's the sound of a Krampus run in Bavaria in 2015. Belschnickel is similar. A wild man with birch switches, he scatters treats upon the floor, and when children go to gather them, begins beating them about their shoulders. Perchten is an equally dual-natured spirit with an ugly Perchten and a beautiful Perchten, dispensing punishment to the bad people of the world and gifts to the good. Nachtrupert is a servant doing the work of St. Nicholas. In some of the Rupert traditions, the children would be summoned to the door to perform tricks such as dancing or singing a song, to press upon Santa and Rupert that they were indeed good children. Those who performed badly would be beaten soundly by Servant Rupert, and those who performed well were given a gift or some treats. Woden, Odin, or Jolapuki, leaders of the Wild Hunt, were changed to St. Nicholas. These figures from the Wild Hunt have influenced the image of Santa Claus today. All of them fly, plus Jolapuki is an elderly man dressed in red. However, the whole changing into a flying goat on Christmas Eve thing was left out of the Christian adaptations. But why would the Wild Hunt become associated with Christmas specifically? As it turns out, the Wild Hunt appeared most often during the depths of winter. It was intimately connected with death and the underworld. In the menacing cold, the almost unrelenting darkness, the eerie, desolate silence broken only by baying winds and galloping storms that characterized winter life in medieval and pre-medieval northern Europe, the worlds of the dead and living were perceived to be at their most permeable. The sometimes terrifying results of being so close to forces much larger than any human, like the death, storms, darkness, and cold that characterized midwinter, are manifested in the idea of the Wild Hunt. So, while mystical and ominous, carols and traditions, more evocative of harbingers than jolly laughs, may seem out of place today, they made a whole lot of sense for the people that came up with them. For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Liv Riggins.
Like most holidays, the history of Christmas often gets lost in translation. Reporter Ben Hallam decided to take a look at how Christmas came to be what it is today.
There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago.
We like to think about Christmas as a season of timeless tradition, stretching back for centuries. But in reality, many of these traditions have a very short history, going back only to the Victorian era in the middle of the 19th century. Before that time, very few people celebrated Christmas in the United States, at least in ways that we would recognize today. The origins of this lack of Christmas spirit go back to America's Puritan past. For Puritans, Christmas was a pagan holiday, an invitation to sin and revelry, and an ahistorical representation of the date of Christ's birth. Cotton Mather, an influential New England religious leader more widely known for his support of the Salem witch trials, wrote in 1712 that Christmas was a time of reveling, dicing, carding, masking, mad mirth, long eating, hard drinking, lewd gaming, and rude reveling. Therefore, most Puritans refused to celebrate the holiday. In fact, the Pilgrims spent their first Christmas in America hard at work building new buildings for Plymouth Colony. And, in 1659, the colony of Massachusetts actually made Christmas illegal, punishing the practice of Christmas, shirking work duties, or feasting with a fine of 5 shillings, about 2 weeks' wages at the time. Though this law was repealed in 1681, the anti-Christmas sentiment continued. The United States Senate assembled on Christmas Day in 1797, as did the House of Representatives in 1802, with little regard for the holiday, which they viewed as a holdover from an era of monarchical privilege. However, as time passed, this anti-Christmas spirit began to recede. It was in the 1830s and 40s that the Christmas holiday we know today, along with its claims to age-old tradition, began to develop. As people moved out of the countryside to large cities and towns, they began to long for a source of tradition, even if the tradition had not existed before. As a result, town squares began to fill with Christmas trees and all the other articles we associate with Christmas today. It was around 1870, when President Ulysses S. Grant made Christmas a federal holiday, that the celebration was really beginning to take a more modern form. To find out what Christmas was like at this time, the cusp of modern Christmas, I talked to Jessica Sutherland, the program supervisor at the James J. Hill House in St. Paul. What were some of the Christmas traditions of the Hill family that we might recognize today?
So I think a lot of us put up a Christmas tree today, and that actually originates from Queen Victoria when she married Prince Albert of Belgium. Albert actually grew up in Germany, and I think a lot of us are familiar with the Christmas tree coming from Germany.
Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum.
So it was really she and him and their children that popularized that tradition. And we know that the Hill family also did have a tree. They put it in the music room. But the interesting thing about the Hill family is that even though they did get their tree pretty early, they actually didn't decorate it until Christmas Eve. So that was something that the family liked to do together on Christmas Eve. We also know that one of the grandchildren's memories of the tree has to do with the cornucopias, so a little cone that was filled with hard candy. And she really remembers those because she wasn't allowed to actually have that candy on the tree. She would actually sneak them off the tree, and she'd go stand behind the tree and hide and eat them back there. She wasn't alone back there because back there was also the houseman, Axel Johnson. He was kind of like the butler. One of his really important jobs, when the Christmas tree was lit, they actually used real candles on the tree. So when they had the real candles lit, he would stand back there with buckets of water just in case the real candles lit the tree on fire.
What sort of gifts would they give at Christmas around this time?
So it started out with just a lot of things that they would actually just put on the tree, really small things like fruits and nuts. Eventually, when it started becoming a little bit more commercialized and the presents started getting a little bit bigger and they were more store-bought, then the presents migrated to under the tree. And we know that Mrs. Hill's children would give her really practical gifts for Christmas. She was Catholic, so one of her children gave her a rosary, a prayer book, a shawl, an embroidered towel. So very, very practical gifts. On the other hand, though, her husband would give her jewelry. So we know that she got some really expensive diamonds and rubies and necklaces and all sorts of really fancy things.
What sorts of Christmas events would go on at this time, like caroling or any other sort of event?
Yeah, caroling was absolutely a tradition. They also would do a lot of holiday parties, kind of like we do today. And we know that they had a dinner for 44 and a dance for 75 on December 14th, 1910. And that was actually when Mr. Hill was out of town, so it was just Mrs. Hill and all of her friends and neighbors. A lot of it was pretty typical, actually. So a dinner party menu actually that night starts off with grapefruit. Then you go to some consommé, which is like a beef broth. And then you go to some lobster a la Newburgh. So maybe a little bit different than we might have today. And then they also did vegetables, so some peas and some mushrooms and some corn and that kind of thing. The one really sort of fancy star of the dinner, though, was the squab, which is baby pigeon, and they would arrange it in a sort of conical tower shape, so they'd be really interesting looking. And then for dessert, coffee, tea, and ice cream.
What other sorts of holiday traditions were beginning at this time?
So the Victorians had some really interesting New Year's traditions, too. So I think a lot of us are familiar with the term ringing in the new year, right? And the Victorians would actually do that. They would literally ring in the new year. So what you would do at midnight on New Year's is everybody would throw their front doors open and they would make a ton of noise. They would literally yell welcome to the new year and they'd clash pans and they'd ring bells. And so they would literally ring in the new year.
The new Victorian traditions practiced by the Hill family were just among a few Victorian traditions that have fundamentally changed how we view Christmas today, which also include Christmas cards, the modern image of Santa Claus, and many other aspects of the holiday which we take for granted. But in reality, they come not from times long ago, but from Christmas recently past. For Rio College Podcast, I'm Ben Hallam.
For many people, New Year's marks the end of the holiday season and the return to normal life. Christmas trees come down and the lights go off. But when I was growing up, that was not the case. My family's Puerto Rican, so on New Year's Day, we would hop on a plane and head to Puerto Rico to be there in time to celebrate El Día de los Reyes, or Three Kings Day. The holiday celebrates the three kings coming when Jesus was born, to celebrate him and give him presents. It's celebrated all around the world, but how it looks in Puerto Rico is really what I know. We would spend the night before Reyes with my mom's family in the mountain town of Orocovis. My grandpa would take me and my cousins to gather the grass and hay that we'd put in shoeboxes for the camels that the three kings rode. You could always hear the sound of the coquis in the background as we were gathering the hay. Then we'd go to bed, and in the morning when we woke up, there would be hay scattered around the floor because the camels had eaten it and made a mess. Presents would be left either under the tree or in our shoes. That tradition, I don't really know where it comes from. The day is really a continued celebration of the birth of Jesus. Some of our presents would say that they were from the three kings, and others would say that they were from baby Jesus. After presents in Orocovis, we would drive down to my other grandparents' house and have a big family reunion and open more presents before heading home to start up school again. Having this tradition is something that I cherish a lot. It's something that is a part of my culture, and I'm glad that I'll be able to pass it down to my own kids someday. That is all for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can hear all our episodes at radiok.org/Real College Podcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Emily Allen, and Liv Riggins. I'm your host and managing editor, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in every Monday at 6:30 for more arts and cultural coverage.